What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
The football pod with Paddy and Andy.
Sure enough, the ref was over. What's your name? And him talking to me for, oh, Max, the ref. What is it? Captain for Trouser, please chat me. I'm loving the Paddy set. Paddy Andrews.
Red card.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
It's time for a brand new slot, Constructive Criticism.
The tag of being a little bit out there because of the social media sort of thing.
I haven't had that proper chance to understand what the rationale was.
Don't give me none of that banter, man. I'm here to talk serious football.
Good morning. The headlines. There has been a mixed reaction to OTB AM's preview of the British and Irish Lions versus the South Africa A team. YouTube commenter Old Man Willie Boy caused consternation this week when he stated, "Wee Owen waxing lyrical about wanting a bloodbath has me laughing into my frosties. He would pass out if he saw a skinned knee." Meanwhile, the fallout continues from the final of the European Football Championships, which took place Sunday last. Irish shock jock Gerard Gilroy deemed the defeat to be pleasurable. However, opposition parties have hit back at the suggestion, with environmentalists asking the question, "What is the matter with this guy?" Michael Noller has published a list of questions for Mr. Gilroy, including, "Does this bitterness towards England do you any good? It seems to occupy a lot of your time." Alan Parker, meanwhile, took a more philosophical view. "Not mentioned the famine yet," he said. Johnny Jones has also weighed in on the bitterness debate by referencing a piece of content that nobody quite remembers from 21 months ago. He is quoted as saying, "Why would anyone expect anything less from this pair?" When Ireland were once again beaten at the quarter-final stage of the 2019 Rugby World Cup, Gerrard stated on camera that the only thing worse than the loss was the sight of two teams he hates, one of which was England, progressing to the semi-final. A couple of bitter tosses. We've been in touch with Mr. Jones's team to establish clarity on whether or not he meant to refer to the couple as tossers. Meanwhile, OTBAM has come under further fire this week for the mere sexiness of everyone involved, with an urgent plea coming in from one listener. They asked, "Can you get uglier presenters, please? The handsomeness of these presenters just makes me too envious to watch. I mean, the bald spot and the ginger beard just makes me melt. I'm sure the ladies feel the same way." Michael Cleary, meanwhile, unhappy with the programme's coverage of the England national football team, took a different tone. His spokesperson described this particular piece of broadcast media as embarrassing. He continued by saying, "Also, have a wash." The skirmishes outside of Wembley Stadium in North London have also garnered much reaction. Old Man Willie Boy, upon concluding the laughter in and around his bowl of frosted flakes, returned to YouTube stating, "Boo hoo hoo, the big nasty Englishmen were being mean." Cast your minds back a few years ago when actual English hooligans took over that stadium in Dublin and humiliated the Gardaí. That was proper hooliganism. The clowns at Wembley were just drunken kids who couldn't afford tickets. They'd get their arses handed to them by the real tear-up lads. Rye B, however, took exception to this statement and in response said, "Hard man, Willie Boy, you're probably an overweight middle-aged white man with nothing going for him in life." A swift riposte from a spokesperson for Old Man Willie Boy was forthcoming, however, and a statement came true as follows. "Ah, the last resort of the simpleton. Insults. Middle-aged? I'm 57, so check. Overweight? If 15 stone is overweight for 6 foot 4 inches, if so, then check. Nothing going on for me in life? Well, I'm watching this from the balcony of my holiday home overlooking the Salcombe Estuary in South Devon. Google it and check the price of a 3-bed flat with sea views while you're at it. Waiting on my dear wife as she prepares the food we are about to take out on our Fairline Targa for the afternoon. If the forecast allows, we may pop over to Dartmouth for drinks, if not a spot of wakeboarding when the tide is right. Where are you watching from?" Rye B has yet to reply. However, JMJ DJE weighed in on the discussion by saying, "I'm watching it from your ma's bedroom." Finally, Thank Jank weighed in on the England fans debate, describing it as a true game atmosphere. It is not Crufts. We will leave this bulletin with footage from the 2018 Crufts Dog Show. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Better explain the video there for the radio listeners.
PETA and their protest in 2018 met with brute force by the stewarding at Crufts in 2018.
Better stewarding at Crufts in 2018 than there was at Wembley the other day, eh?
It's true.
Eh?
It's true.
And it's noticeable too, one of the stories in the Gulf is that they've massively beefed up security in the wake of what happened at the Gulf last week, where some randomer walked across, picked out Rory McIlroy's golf club, stood on the tee, had a few swings of it, and Rory and his caddy and who one of the other players they were with.
Was it Ram?
Yeah, it was Ram, yeah. Are all kind of looking, going, what is the story with this? And let's see, so security has been beefed up at all the global sports events in particular. So the target is quite expensive, it looks like. The Fairline target, was that what it was?
Yeah, well, what are we talking here?
Price on application, but anything between 210 grand or 600 grand.
That's a wild spectrum there. In pounds?
I want to say in pounds. I want to say dollars, maybe.
Okay, right. So not going to be anything on my radar for the next little while.
Oh, I'm sure old man Willie Boy will offer you a ride. He seemed to be open to the the suggestion.
Certainly open to the suggestion, it seems, yeah.
Speaking of targas and yachts, I think Tab of the Morning Tea officially is going to be on the Star this morning, Tommy McGregor. This is your old mucker, Tony McGregor. But the headline is Tommy McGregor because he needed to call the RNLI to come and rescue him in his boat because Connor's dad all at sea is the headline. And the boat got stuck. The battery died and the anchor got stuck in the seabed. Apparently it's relatively common. And the good folks of the RNLI from Dunleary had to go out and tow me McGregor.
Oh God, is he okay?
I mean, totally fine, yeah. That's how it works.
Well, that's good news, God. I mean, he's obviously built up quite an experience over the last little while. I don't know what happened there yesterday. It would be terrible if anything, because that boat has been one of the most Instagram famous things that we've seen in Ireland over the last little while. It'd be terrible to see anything happen to it.
So the other comments that that didn't make the official highlights reel that were some that we want to talk about here from the World Cup bid. 93 Rubik's Cube says, can we just ditch England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales, have Hampden, Ibrox, Celtic Park, Murrayfield, Liberty Stadium, Cardiff City Stadium, Principality Stadium, Aviva, Croke Park, Parky Cove. Wales, Scotland and Ireland fans all have great reputations, particularly Ireland and Wales. Who wouldn't want a Celtic World Cup? I hope football never goes home. Can we just ditch England full stop? Ireland, Scotland and Wales have. That was the list of them. So this is for the World Cup bid. Could we do it without England? Is that possible? Without their political clout and their craft and their nous and without Bojo the clown?
I think we could maybe, could we make a pitch for a European Championships? Maybe not with 32 teams if that ever happened. Maybe not even with 24. Maybe we could with 24, in Ireland, Wales, Scotland. Triumvirate could definitely be workable, you would have thought. I'm sure it has enough stadiums. Like, it has struck me that over the past couple of weeks, this European Championships, without the big nations, would have been pretty cool in normal circumstances. That if they are going to go pan-European again, like, leave England off. And it's nothing to do with what happened at the weekend. It's just they'll probably have a major tournament again at some other point. Leave Munich off. Leave the Spanish cities off and let it be spread around the countries that will never be able to host tournaments on their own two feet. And away you go and see what happens. Now, in fairness, maybe it's unfair to like cut Spain out considering one of the games was supposed to be in Bilbao and they weren't, for obvious reasons, they were never going to use the Camp Nou, but they didn't use Bernabeu, for example.
Well, they might use Camp Nou for something like a pan-European thing. Like, that might make sense.
Yeah.
I know Spain never play there, obviously, because it's not in Spain, it's in Catalonia. But maybe for something like the European Championships, you could have maybe a quarterfinal there, and maybe Spain qualify or don't qualify. Or there
Yeah, like, because I was thinking, what would happen then, actually, if you took Wembley out? Where would your final be on? Where your 90,000-seater stadium's gone? I mean, Camp Nou could be a pretty good replacement, because I assume that there needs to be a certain size, or maybe even just for the kind of strength of the bid, you'd need to have a certain size stadium to say we're going to play our final here and all our big games here. And like, obviously, there'll be a lot of those stadiums that are the national stadiums of those medium to small size countries that just wouldn't be big enough to go toe to toe with a Wembley.
We had Eamon Dunphy with us on Monday post-tournament, and he talked about how England ended up getting caught up in the narrative. Paul, his comment says, there's still talk of Southgate getting a knighthood. Imagine him getting a job at Tranmere Rovers, having won nothing for England or at club level, and having to be addressed as Sir Gareth Southgate. Sir G.
Yeah. The knighthood is obviously on ice. Everything's on ice with regards to this England team, because if they had won on Sunday, there could have been instantaneous knighthoods handed out, which would have been crazy. And I'm not sure that happened to people in their actual playing career. I'm sure it's happened to a couple of Olympians, has it, before they retired?
I'd say, yeah, Sir Mo. Sir Mo a Mo, sir? Is he? I don't know.
I don't know either.
I tend not to pay any attention to this.
The only one I know is Chris Hoy for sure, because I don't know, maybe he's more insistent on the sir being put before his name or something, but did he compete in the Olympics as a sir? I'm not sure. I'm sure somebody out there kind of remembers the exact timeline of those things, but it would be mad. Because what is the club job? What is the next job for Gareth Southgate after England?
It's back to Middlesbrough, really, isn't it? I mean, maybe he'll probably get the Villa job at some point because of his connections with it. He might get the Palace job because he's got connections there too. You could see him being like the perfect mid-tier English manager of an English team that he played for.
Mm. Yeah, good. I definitely see that working, and then obviously using that as a springboard to try and get a bigger job potentially in the Premier League. But I would say that would probably be his limit, that sort of mid-table.
If he wins the World Cup, could he get the United job? He could get the Spurs job.
I'm not quite sure about that, to be honest. I think there are still, while
if you win the World Cup.
Yeah,
really?
I still think if you look at the way club football looks at international football, it does look down on it a little bit, doesn't it?
Even Americans who don't know anything about the thing, like, wow, you won the World Cup for men.
That's, well, okay, I hadn't really considered who the decision maker in all of this would be.
Well, I mean, obviously Daniel Levy knows a thing or two about football.
But the Glazers would obviously fit into that category of...
Or Arsenal. Would he take the Arsenal job? He probably wouldn't take the Arsenal job.
That would just be career suicide for Gareth Southgate to take the Arsenal job.
As an Englishman, this is the most honest and insightful analysis of the game, of the performance. We were arrogant and underestimated the Italians when we were beaten by Germany at Wembley in 1996. I felt more hurt because those players gave everything the other night. Apart from scoring an early goal, we barely laid a glove on Italy, only two shots on target. It seems the semi-final defeat at the World Cup 3 years ago. Lessons have still not been learned by Southgate, says Paul. And so angry he was that there wasn't a single piece of punctuation in the middle of that. On the Wembley chaos that we covered, Chrissy says, I've got no political agenda. I'm a woman who's been attending football matches for over 40 years. On Sunday, I witnessed the vilest behaviour in the most frightening environment I've ever experienced. I think we avoided a major disaster by the skin of our teeth. Appalled by some of the comments below, get real. In the comments she was appalled by were playing down the seriousness of the situation. There was some pretty selective camera work going on because we saw none of this on the networks, says Roger. And why is this not being seriously reported in the UK? Why is this the second day I'm getting this reporting from Ireland, says Run DMC. I think the BBC eventually did 10 minutes on it. I don't know if that was on the Tuesday or maybe it was on the Monday, but certainly eventually. And it was on the front pages again on Tuesday and again yesterday. Harry Maguire talking about his dad having his ribs crushed was something that came up at that point too. So on the rugby stories that we were covering this week, surely Alwyn Jones coming back is basically a disruption at this stage. And if his shoulder goes 5 minutes into the first test, you lose the impact from the bench. I was very disappointed when he got injured, but I'm not sure dropping him back in weeks into the tour is a good thing. An interesting point. What if it goes again?
I think that's what they're going to try and find out early next week. If they're going to put him under pressure in training, I'd imagine, from Monday onwards and see how it holds up. And they'd like to get a read on that before facing a Springbok, which is probably an entirely different challenge to what you're going to get in training. Because if you're going up against Alwyn Jones in training, he's your captain. How hard can you really hit him? How hard can you really go in?
Whereas
the Springboks are not being instructed to target a weak shoulder. But let's just say that the instinct is there.
It comes naturally to them, yeah. Well, it's like we were the Springboks and they were actually the lion, clawing at the throat of the Springbok. And when I say that, and it sounds metaphorical, I don't mean it to be metaphorical, I mean it to be literally. There will be clawing and gouging. I mean, they were at it last night a little bit, and they were not quite up to speed. Maybe that's what the Lions needed, to be beaten last night, to see the physical prowess of their opponents up close. I love OTB, but lads, you need to get over Johnny Sexton not going. Great player, but past his best, says Simon. Most importantly, Smith is clearly going out as backup to a backup. probably won't see much game time. Given how competitive he is, Sexton would expect to start, and that's clearly not in Gat's thinking now. He'd probably not even be happy warming the bench, so probably not the sort of character you need around camp in an already difficult situation. So I don't think any of that's true. I actually think, if you look at what happened, right? Bigger has an ankle injury, and Owen Farrell plays, and doesn't play well last night. I don't think anybody could pretend that Owen Farrell played well last night. So now you've got an injured first choice out half, an out of form second choice out half, Finn Russell, we're not sure if he's going to play, and you've got a completely inexperienced kid. Whereas if you had the in case of emergency break last, oh look, it's an emergency, Johnny Sexton's already there, and bedded in, would that not have been a better decision? Really?
Well, yeah. From the start I've said, who do you want as your replacement if things are going awry, injury-wise, and maybe even results-wise, late in a second or a third test? Who do you want coming off the bench? Johnny Sexton, or whether it's Smith, or whether it's Finn Russell, I think was actually the argument I made at the start. You would probably pick Sexton, but it's not. That's not the only thing that comes into play in this decision. It is for a long tour. It is for the happiness of the person around the camp. And like,
it's not a long tour anymore. We're halfway through, essentially. There's like 3.5 weeks left.
True.
Well,
true.
A bit longer, but.
But also, like, I mean, this could be how Gatland is viewing it. He maybe views Sexton as somebody who wouldn't be happy to sit on the bench, and if that's what Gatland thinks, and that's. Then, and even if he's wrong, I guess there's nothing you can do to necessarily change that. I do think, though, that in fairness to Warren Gatland, we said this the other day, that he has spoken about this in the past, and it's the durability of Sexton, the string of games that he's put together recently, that worries him. And it's hard to disagree with that, really. He has his reason for not picking Johnny Sexton, and it's based in fact and it's based in reality. He's not deluded in not picking Sexton. Like, I'm not sure if it's us, like, patriotically obsessed with Johnny Sexton. I think actually our arguments have mostly been based on what he can bring as an out half.
Yeah.
But that's also based on and not so recent form. It's based on the Six Nations, and there has, in fairness, been a bit of rugby played since then.
No harm, but Paddy has no notion of Ulster football if he's riding Armagh or Monaghan off for the Ulster title. Too much time spent watching Leinster football. This is Paddy Andrews. We'll talk about this with Tommy a little bit later on when he was talking about how he thinks the winners of Donegal and Tyrone are going to be ending up in the All-Ireland semi-final. I think Armagh have got a chance, you've got to say. And the other thing is that Monaghan up against Tyrone in Ulster have been amazing down through the years. Not so good when they got to Croke Park against the same opposition. But also, look, I don't think that if whoever comes through from Donegal, Tyrone are going to be, they're going to be favourites against either Armagh or Monaghan, but I don't think they're going to be too, it's not going to be an easy game for them, and they're not going to be delighted about the fact that they have to get through that game to get to Croke Park. So, I think it was for the sake of brevity. Unless he just thinks Armagh and Monaghan are absolute pants. We'll get to preview that game with Paddy, by the way. Don't worry about it. And Jack says, proposal B all the way. The only other thing I'd say is it's extremely important to have some incentive for winning the Tailteann Cup, i.e. a preliminary All-Ireland quarter-final place. It's a really good point, right? Some reason for the players to stay interested in a competition that doesn't mean anything would be huge. But how do you give them the preliminary All-Ireland quarter-final place? Unless you give it to them the next year? Is that what you could do?
That would have to be it, really.
Is that doable?
Look, of course it is. Instead of giving it to, I don't know, the Division 4 winner, but that you're kind of losing a place.
They would play off. Do you know? That's like
a preliminary to the preliminary quarterfinal sort of thing. So, or else you just expand it from 10 to 12.
In year one you don't do it, but in year two, the winners of the Tailteann Cup get grandfathered into a preliminary to the preliminary, or maybe you do make it 12, and or if you don't already. So let's say year one's Tailteann Cup winners are the team who finished second in Division 4 or third in Division 3, and so therefore they wouldn't have had a place automatically, but the next season they get in automatically. I don't know.
Yeah, like I do think that there's scope to broaden those 10 teams into something bigger. I think, in fairness, one of the automatic reactions from people has been, and kind of looking through comments as well to our piece the other day, has been the Division 1 teams that don't get in, and then that should be their expansion.
We should talk about that, right? Because, yeah. Like, screw them. At the start of the year, in the Division 1, if you're in Division 1, you've got 5/8 of a possibility of qualifying. If you're in Division 3, you need to win essentially every game to qualify. You're telling me that a team who in Division 1, at the start of the year, has a 5/8 chance of qualifying, can't get their crap together to do it, loses more games than they win, more than likely to finish fifth, potentially is losing 5 games deserves a place in the All-Ireland quarterfinals more than a team from Division 3 who wins essentially 7 out of 8 games. How does that make sense?
Yeah, like I've definitely come around to that side of things as well, and it comes back to this idea of the league looking like the league and feeling like the league, and that the All-Ireland is real championship. It starts when you get down to the 10 teams, which is not the case.
No, I mean, it's day one.
Everybody will be approaching the league in championship form, and if you're approaching this like championship, and as you say, you lose the majority of your games,
out
then
you go.
You probably don't deserve to
you
be
do
in
not.
The knockout stages.
No.
And I think that if you're... I think as well, though... Like,
just follow that through for 1 second. Follow that through. Say a team who finished sixth, or fifth or sixth, in Division 1, won the All-Ireland, having lost 5 games in the part of it. Think of the outroar at the end of the season. Oh, they lost 5 games and they won Sam Maguire. How'd that happen?
Not sure who that was supposed to be. Is that me? Is that like,
I would be
outraged for sure. I would definitely be outraged, and yeah, it would also sort of dilute the competitiveness a little bit in Division One, where you would have Kerry and Dublin, certainly maybe Dublin of the last 5 or 6 years, knowing that they could sleepwalk through the early rounds, or Dublin getting beaten, for example, by Monaghan in Croke Park a couple of years ago. That would suddenly become a really significant event in the modern. Proposal B for the All-Ireland, because if that happened early in the championship, you're like, oh, Dublin need to win a few games in the bounce now. And
out of Dublin, out of Croker, yeah.
Whereas if it's 6 teams or 7 teams, you're like, okay, they
completely
just need
pointless.
To not be last or not
Absolutely.
Get relegated.
Absolutely, loads of dead rubber is completely pointless.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. And then obviously the flip side of that is the high stakes in the lower divisions. And also having only 10 teams in the knockout means that if you manage to cause an upset in the preliminary quarterfinals, I don't know, you start to dream. Whereas if you... bump up to 12 to 16, one of those teams that comes from the lower divisions who actually gets a win.
It's again, irrelevant.
It's just a massive sort of bubble that you're trying to burst into.
Yeah. All right. OTBN brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. That is our new slot. Tell us in the comments what you think of our new slot.
The tag of being a little bit out there because of the social media sort of thing.
I haven't had that proper chance to understand what the rationale was.
Give me none of that banter, man. I'm here to talk serious football.